Okay, let's try to start this. The Legacy and Budget Stabilization Advisory Board meeting will start. Clerk will take the roll.
Chairman Kepnick?
Here.
Vice Chairman Klein?
Here.
Representative Kreit?
Here.
Senator Sinner?
Here.
Mr. Hardmeyer?
Here.
Mr. Rauschenberger?
Here.
Ms. Sharp?
Okay, we have a quorum. Now the next item. Next item. Did we? We didn't on both minutes. We didn't approve the minutes, or we just need done for the December minutes.
At the December meeting, we had a motion to approve the earlier set of minutes, and there was we had the motion and the second, but we didn't actually have the vote. So we just need to vote on that, and then we need to approve as we normally do the December meeting.
Okay. Well, we'll proceed with that. Anybody have any questions about what we're going to, we just need a voice vote, right?
Right. Yeah. And Mr. Chairman, the motion that was still on the table, you know, it was made by Senator Klein, seconded by Representative Kreit to approve the June 2015 meetings.
Okay. Any questions? All approve. Yay.
Aye.
Okay. Motion carried. Okay. We have the minutes for the December 2nd meeting. Okay, well, then we get into the meat of what we need, what we're here for, I guess. Huh?
I'd move that we accept the minutes of the December 2nd meeting.
Second.
We just voted on the June.
Oh, we just voted on the June ones? Oh, okay, yeah, we need the December 2nd one. Okay. Okay, second, Jared and George, you seconded the motion. Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay, that's approved. Okay, now we can get to the 9-10 agenda.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. For the record, my name is Dave Hunter. I serve as the Executive Director and Chief Investment Officer for the Retirement Investment Office. I've had the privilege of doing that since December 2nd of 2013. Accompanying me today is Darren Schultz, who serves as our Deputy CIO and has done that in that capacity for over 4 years. I handed out a presentation. It was also put up on the website. I'm going to just walk through the agenda briefly to start. Today, what we're going to do is provide an overview of the Budget Stabilization Fund and the Legacy Fund, including a funding status update, asset allocation, investment performance, a review of the investment policy statement, and also talk about the Bank of North Dakota Match Loan CD program. That is the agenda. If there's no questions, I'll move to the next page, which starts on the Budget Stabilization Fund. This is a roll forward of the activity in the Budget Stabilization Fund since the initial funding in September 2005. You can see, let's see if this little to date, through April 30th, 2016, about $567 million has been contributed into the Budget Stabilization Fund. It started off with about $99 million in 2006, a little over $100 million in 2008, up to almost $125 million in 2010, a little over $61 million in 2012, and a record $181 million in 2014, again, totaling $567 million. We've had income over that time period of about $70 million, a little over $70 million. You can see every year, except for one, we've had positive income. It speaks to the relatively high appreciation we have for capital preservation within this fund. It's not a large income generating fund, but it seeks to preserve our capital. And the fact that we've only had 1 year of a loss was in the great financial crisis in 2009 speaks to show that we're doing as expected. Income distributions are about $64 million, so we've retained about $6.2 million in the fund since its inception. As of April 30th, 2016, we have about a little over $580 million in it as of this point in time. Later this month, we will make a transfer to the general fund to get it to the cap. The cap is in the footnote there about 572 million, 0.485 million. So somewhere in the neighborhood of $8 to $10 million is what will be transferred from the budget stabilization fund to the general fund, and we coordinate that with Pam Sharp over at OMB.
Now, would that be considered part of the ending fund balance then? Or our, I wish he was here today, but that's, would that would have, when they bring that in now, would that been included, or is, would that been an addition to what's been kind of brought out here the last couple months?
So when we do the transfer from the budget stabilization fund to the general fund, it will then become part of the general fund.
So it'd be basically the ending fund balance, part of the ending fund balance.
So about $8 to $10 million. So.
Okay.
Next page just highlights the asset allocation policy, which is 100% short-term fixed income and Bank of North Dakota CDs. The next slide is a Callen slide in which we just show the actual and target asset allocation. The asset allocation is actually, it's 100% kind of short-term fixed income, and then whatever the BND CDs are is kind of the offsetting portion of it. So we never really have any significant variance between the CDs allocation and what it should be. It's kind of whatever it is what we accept it to be. On the next page, we talk about performance for the budget stabilization fund. So this shows that for the 1, 3, and 5 year periods ended March 31st, 2016, the actual net investment return of the budget stabilization fund has exceeded its policy benchmark. It's ranged from about 1.37% return for the 1 year ended March 31st, 2016, to about 1.83% for the 5 years ended March 31st, 2016. Again, that's exceeded our policy benchmark probably by about 29 basis points or 0.29% over the last year, or about 1.23% over the last 5 years. Again, just stating the obvious, you know, given the current low interest rate environments, returns in the budget stabilization fund have declined in recent years, as it just elaborated on. But on a positive note, we have beat our performance benchmark by anywhere from about 25 to 125 basis points. Again, just to emphasize, the nature of this rainy day fund is capital preservation, not income generation. As a result, the fact that we have a very low risk profile, less than 1%, and the fact that we've only had 1 year of a loss over the last 10 years, seeks to support our premise that we're supporting the its goal of capital preservation with some minimal income generation over the last
Mr. 5 Chairman.
Years.
Go ahead.
A question. Dave.
Yes.
Is our performance is in these numbers is that this net, is this obviously after expenses are paid, everything is paid, are our expenses far lower than what the benchmark would be as well? Is that kind of why we're outperforming the benchmark?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Senator Sinner, that is a key contributor to it, but it also is some active management being generated by J.P. Morgan in a short-term fixed income bond fund, and also, I believe it's, let's just see here, and it's also Babson. So if we were to look at the next slide, so this is for the 5 years ended March 31st, 2016, our Babson Capital absolutely generated a 2.15% net return versus a benchmark of 0.68. So fees are a key component to that, right? Net returns are a function of what you're paying. So Babson has actually, so I'm on page 7. And if you look at the 3 years ended, we're actually at 2.15% for the Babson Capital versus 0.68. So that's where the manager has actually generated above benchmark performance. Just to speak to your fee question as well, though, in general, I think we're paying a reasonable price for fees. So this is 2014 and 2015. Just to step back a little bit, we only kind of do a hardcore roll-up of our fees on an annual basis, on a fiscal year-end basis, June 30th, 2016. The reason why we do that is we do have some managers that we pay on an incentive calculation basis, and it's based upon a kind of a one-year rolling period. And until we get to June 30th, we don't know if we're going to be paying a performance fee or not, so it's kind of hard to give an interim estimate. Having said that, if we're paying between 12 to 15 basis points for fees on this short-term fixed income, that's actually a pretty good market comp. So to address your question, Senator Sinner, I would say that is part of the process, is that we're getting a good deal on our fees overall.
Yeah, well, committee, and that's been one of our conversations since we've started this, has been the cost of, because as it gets bigger, of course, the more money you're going to spend, it, you know, and it does get to be, we've had some conversations about this in the past, of, especially on these types of investments where it's just a pretty much a straight up and down type investment. I mean, this isn't rocket science doing this type of investing and stuff. How to make some money doing it might be rocket science, but it isn't, as far as just investing, it isn't that tough to do.
That's a great point, Chairman Kepenick. In the end, the assets of the state investment board clients have grown by over 50% between June 30th, 2013 and March 31st, 2016, over 15%, went from less than $7.5 billion to over $11 billion. Number one driver of that is the legacy fund that we'll be talking about shortly. When we have that additional capital to manage, it just gives us more leverage to work with our strategic partners, our 35 investment managers, to say what's the best deal we can get. Over the course of the last two fiscal years, ended June 30th, 2015, we've reduced overall SIB client investment management fees from about 0.25% or 0.65% down to about 47 bips, a little under 0.5%. And maybe that doesn't sound like a lot, that 17 bips, but on $10 billion, that translates into over $17 million of savings a year. So it is important. It does make a difference. So.
Okay, continue.
So Senator Skinner's question just kind of prompted me to kind of go through this question right here with the Budget Stabilization Fund. Overall, for the current fiscal year to date, the Budget Stabilization Fund has generated 1.02% of net return versus a policy benchmark of 0.98. I do have an update through through April 30th. And through April 30th, we're at about 1.27% on a fiscal year-to-date basis, so a little bit better. Again, we do have the B and D CDs in here that are earning about 2.12%. Cash earns next to nothing, less than 10 basis points overall. BEPS and capital for the last year, or for the current fiscal year-to-date, generated a return of about 0.68%, and the J.P. Morgan investment generated about a 0.97%. Add it all up, the net return is a little over 1% through March 31, or a little over 1.25% through April 30th, 2016.
And Dave, as we go forward here now, and I know in our conversations in the past with Pam and stuff, they're going to put off these transfers as long as possible. But are you in the process now of dissolving out some of these accounts and stuff on it to have cash? Do we have any penalties, I guess, that we got to pay, because some of these are in a little longer than, they aren't turning over every 6 months? Is there some penalties that we're going to have to pay to get out of them, if, you know, at the end of the year? Or how is that going to work?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, the vast majority of the Budget Stabilization Fund is invested in short-term fixed income. There's no penalties whatsoever. That's, for the most part, daily liquidity. We would be prudent in doing our redemptions, but it's very liquid. It could be fully liquidated within a week or two time frame, if not sooner, if absolutely necessary. That the process is, we would work with PAM and OMB to say what's the requirement, and we would telegraph that, we would notify that, we would work with our investment managers to have a logical process for the redemption. The concept with the BND CDs, I'm going to just touch on that a little bit later. We could talk to it here shortly, might as well. So in connection with the Bank of North Dakota CDs, when we work with Tim Porter and Eric Hardmeyer over at the Bank of North Dakota, we've never, to my knowledge, ever been assessed any type of quote-unquote prepayment penalty fees. The concept that we're discussing about here today is that REAL's intent is to transfer the existing BND match loan CD program from the Budget Stabilization Fund to the legacy fund. So there, quote-unquote, would be no need to, quote-unquote, redeem or prepay any of those facilities. Does that more specifically address your question then?
Well, it does, as far as the BND
okay.
Program and stuff on it. It does. I guess it's more of just the, like I said, we aren't really, we're using this fund right now. You know, I mean, technically it's being used to back up the general fund.
Yes.
And, but at some point we are going to actually have to transfer money out of this. And so at some point, that's why I was just wondering if we had any penalties or anything that we'd have to, but it's liquid enough where there's no, we could pull that at any time.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, that is correct. Darren, would you care to add anything to that point? Just to say if there's any redemption or prepayment penalties on any of the short-term fixed income.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, the two short-term fixed income accounts we have with J.P. Morgan and Babson, they're highly liquid. The bulk of these portfolios could be redeemed within a day, and there would be some residual trading in subsequent days. But other than market impact from trading, there's no penalty for putting in a direction letter for making a withdrawal.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Dave, a couple questions. Do you have any kind of indication on in terms of when that might be drawn upon? And secondly, what is the manner in which you're going to liquidate the assets to transfer over to the general fund?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Hardmeyer, so a couple questions in there. We will work with OMB and Pam Sharp to make sure that we're aware of what the budget needs are of the state in order to do the transfer. Given the liquidity profile that we have within that short-term fixed income portfolio, if we were notified today that we had to do it tomorrow, technically we could do it. We'd like to have a more advanced notice than that. Ideally, we will. From prior discussions I've had with the office of OMB, is that we should have, I don't know, a month or two or longer kind of heads up notice, if not 3 months kind of time frame for that. So we will work with OMB as they get additional kind of budget feedback into the general fund to say what's a plan, game plan going forward. So my intent right now is that course over the, if we needed to over the course of the next 6 months, we'd do it in a very logical manner. For whatever reason, I seem to have a belief that perhaps funds won't be tapped until after that, but we shall see based upon input from OMB in the governor's office. But I invite any additional insight that any individual here might have on that process as well. But I have no concerns from being able to transfer funds and providing liquidity.
Well, I think what we're looking at is the last 6 months is what we're looking, you know, and the legislature will be in session within that time frame too. But this is money that is going to be committed. I mean, well, it technically is committed now. You know, it's just that it's not spent. Mm-hmm. Is the biggest thing. It is. So that's what I just was trying to figure out, the technicalities of transferring it over and not having it cost us any more than what it already is and stuff on it. So
it really shouldn't be an overly challenging task. So I mean, the nature of those investments are short-term fixed income with the key that we will tap them upon shorter notice than we would a longer-term investment fund. So although we're always mindful of transaction costs and trading impact, we can work with our investment team and our managers, which are in this case in point, J.P. Morgan and Babson. Big scheme of things, although it's a significant amount of money, $500 million to withdraw, in the big scheme of things, it's not something that would cause a major delay or major transaction from a trading impact, as long as we're not doing it at a very inopportune, like trying to do it in the last week of a calendar year, something along those lines.
Oh, in other words, we're not going to move the Jones with
no.
The
right.
Action.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So.
Any other questions? Go ahead.
Thank you, Chairman Kempenich. I don't know, Dave, if you know the answer, someone, legislative council, but is there a balance that we have to leave in the budget stabilization fund under a certain amount or something, or can we deplete the whole thing? We can deplete the whole thing. For some reason, I always thought there was an amount that had to stay in there. Maybe I'm wrong.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Representative McCrite, to my knowledge, I'm not aware of it, although that would be a great question to ask OMB. I am aware of the cap, and that's what we do disclose here is the cap that we adjust for each time and period. But I invite if anyone has any thoughts on it.
I've never heard of
those. Mr. Chairman, no, there is no minimum amount that needs to stay in the fund. If there's a revenue shortfall, the governor could transfer the entire amount to the general fund to cover a shortfall, but it has to be to cover a shortfall.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, you want to continue on 9? We started on top of that, I guess, and stuff.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. So Real intends to transfer the existing B&D match loan CDE program from the budget stabilization fund to the legacy fund prior to a material portion of this rainy day fund being used to offset expected budget shortfalls. Real's recommendation is contingent upon B&D guaranteeing a minimum 1.75% return. noting that the current five-year Treasury rates, upon which the CD rates are based, as of June 9th, they were 1.21. As of this morning, they were 1.15. So it continued to decline slightly. The minimum return requirement will be reviewed periodically to ensure the legacy fund will be able to maintain its long-term expected rate of return of approximately 6.4%. The BSF investment policy statement will be revised to exclude the BND CD program accordingly. The legacy fund's current asset allocation is 50% equity, 35% fixed income, and 15% real assets. Real can incorporate a BND CD program within the fixed income allocation of the legacy fund without materially impacting its overall return and risk profile. The key component to that is that the CD program size is limited to the lesser of $200 million or 5% of the legacy fund, and a minimum 1.75% return requirement is maintained for this AA rated investment. That's the kind of the key component of it. If we were to go out and say what are AA CDs offered at today in the market, it's at a rate that's probably about 50 basis points below that. That ability to have a higher return requirement of 1.75 allows us to incorporate it into our overall fixed income allocation and actually probably maintain, if not slightly enhance, our overall return expectations going forward. These relevant terms will be incorporated in the revised investment policy statement for the legacy fund. I want to note that REAL discussed this action with the State Investment Board on May 27, 2016, in which the State Investment Board confirmed governance policy E12, which states the source of funding for CDs shall be determined by the investment director of REAL. If the advisory board has any questions with regard to this proposed action, we would love to discuss it at this point in time or at any point in time in the future.
So basically, and now is this going to be over a time period that this is getting transferred over? I mean, this didn't happen. I mean, we had the discussion here the last couple of weeks, but this is going to take place over the next, what, 2-3 months, or as because there, this money was, this $200 million was already in a, it being invested is my guess, you know, so we had to pull this out and bring it into the BND fund then.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. So what we will do, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, is that we will work with OMB and Pam Sharp to make sure that we meet the needs of the general fund and the overall budget expectation, seek to maximize returns of our budget stabilization fund and legacy fund in connection with other fixed income activity that we're contemplating at this point in time. So it'll be part of an overall program to make sure that we maintain our expected risk and return goals for budget stabilization fund and the legacy fund even more so, because it has critical assets. The budget stabilization fund will largely be heavily depleted, so we'll be more focused on legacy fund going forward for obvious reasons.
Okay, any questions? Okay. Oh, well, go ahead and...
Isn't it an account? I mean, there's no money moving.
Well, yeah. Why don't you come up, Kelly, and just give your opinion, and then we can.
To give you clarification, Kelly Schmidt, State Treasurer, State Investment Board member. This, there's no dollars moving. I mean, the money will stay. This is just a bookkeeping, accounting transfer as far as it will be now established in the legacy fund versus the budget stabilization fund. So it's not like we're liquidating a bunch of assets and taking it out and then moving it over into a different bucket. It's really just an accounting piece.
Well, it is going into a different, I mean, because the rules are different, but it
but from our world, it,
yes,
it, from it, our world, it's just an,
yeah,
accounting,
yeah,
piece.
Well, it's just as, that's why I was asking, because this isn't all happening in one day. It's just as money comes in and gets reallocated out, it'll just take over. Yeah, I mean, it'll just kind of morph into this piece instead of where it was residing earlier, is what, because it can't, there is a difference, because the way the budget stabilization fund was kind of a tent, you know, I mean, and so that's why we just needed to, we just need to clarify of how it was being transferred over, I guess. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Madam Treasurer, all this is doing is it's an asset that's backing this program. We're protecting it. The money stays where it is, but we're, well, the asset that allows this to happen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator or Representative Crate, we're honoring the commitment that's been made to the Bank of North Dakota in this program. We've just shifted the dollars from calling them dollars under the bucket of the budget stabilization fund to now the bucket of the legacy fund.
Yeah. So, and if people start asking questions, who's going to answer? I mean, we can answer, but I mean, there's going to be questions. Is money going out of the legacy fund? You know, I can see.
There's no money going out.
I know, but I, you know.
We get those questions every day.
Okay.
And we are happy to answer them. If the detail is more than I feel comfortable, we send it off to Dave, and together we tag team it. And the answers are available. We're putting additional information on our website daily. We just added a complete new piece to our website just last Friday relating to the Legacy Fund. So there's a lot of information, and I can tell you we receive a lot of phone calls relating to the Legacy Fund.
Because, you know, situation that we're going to see as we go into the next session, you know, everybody's kind of looking at this legacy fund, and my feelings, and I've expressed it many times, that the legacy fund is a long-term situation. We shouldn't be dipping into it at this point, 15 years, 10 years from now, maybe. If we wouldn't have done this, we'd have spent this money. There wouldn't be this money. It'd be gone. I can assure you of that. So to me, it's like money that isn't there, and it should stay that way.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Crate, we get those calls of folks telling us what we need to tell you. And so we typically give them the name and number of their local legislator and ask them to get in touch with you so that they can share the information and the concerns that they have with the people that, that work for them.
Very good.
Mr. Chairman, I'm a little slow in the uptake here. So what we're doing is using that those funds that were available. We're concerned that they may be gone. So this is an effort to create another account. So that's, I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to explain this when I am questioned. That we're just calling it something else to protect a program that they're currently using. Is that what we're doing?
Mr. Chairman, members, board, Senator Klein.
I'm looking for the most simple answer I can find.
If I could. So the Bank of North Dakota has been working with SIB since 1991 to offer this program. It's called the Match Program because we match fund it using a CD that SIB has invested in the Bank of North Dakota. And so for many years, you know, we weren't necessarily aware of what fund it was coming from. It was just kind of an overall commitment that they would, you know, find $200 million within the funds that they managed and carve that out, purchasing CDs from the bank, which are backed by the full faith and credit of the state of North Dakota. And today that carries, you know, a AA rating. So there is no credit risk to SIB. This would be, you know, along the lines of purchasing a U.S. Treasury, perhaps, with maybe a little bit more risk. And I think the liquidity issue, while it's not traded daily, if the money is needed, you know, the Bank of North Dakota will work to liquidate the asset. But yeah, it just simply, as Kelly has said, it is just simply a transition from, you know, maybe earmarked out of the budget stabilization fund to now earmarked out of the legacy fund. So I don't think there'd be any liquidation of anything. It just simply moved over here and accounted for over here differently. And so there isn't a spend, so to speak, out of the legacy fund. It's just another investment is what it is.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, it's a great point. It's just, so since 1991, there's actually been a few transfers. I think at one point in time it was in the Teachers Fund for Retirement and the State Risk Management Fund. So it's just another transfer from one SIB client fund to another at this point in time. So probably its best holding place would be the legacy fund, given its intergenerational wealth goals. And when you think about what the BND Match Loan CD program is, it's intended to create jobs for the long term and investment for the long term. That's fairly similar to what you think about what is the legacy fund. It's to create intergenerational wealth. So I think it's a good alignment.
Okay, continue.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, we kind of covered the next slide already then, page 10. I was going to just focus on the budget stabilization fund investment policy statement. The change that we would make then is on page, now this is bad, when I got multiple pages, I apologize, but so if you look at the screen, it's numbered 3 on the screen. It's under policy guidelines, and right now we say in the second paragraph, in recognition of these factors, following allocation is deemed appropriate for the fund. The first one would say short-term fixed income and B and D CDs, minimum of 90%. We would strike B and D CDs, and we would strike the next sentence that says Bank of North Dakota match loan certificates of deposits limit of 35%. So that's all we would need to do to modify our investment policy statement. So very straightforward. I had no other points on the budget stabilization. Yes.
Do we need to make a motion then to change these policy guidelines, or is that this? Is that, yeah? That is our. This is basically what we came up with here. So would we have to have a motion to change?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, what I would like to do is once we have a plan of when the transfer will take place, working with OMB, I will come back to you at that point in time and say, at this point in time, we are formally requesting a change in the policy. So right now, we'll keep it for that, and we will look to work with the OMB to identify a game plan for transitioning it in the future.
And I will say that we still don't believe we will have to make that transfer for several months.
Okay.
Cash flow is still fine. So,
kind of earlier before you came, we were kind of got into time frames and stuff like that. And that I know the last time you were in front of the budget set, you know, you're holding out as long as possible.
Absolutely.
To do this stuff. So we kind of just left it there too.
So maybe ballpark, I would still think maybe the last 6 months of the biennium or something like that.
So,
okay.
But it's, for all intents and purposes, though, it's committed. You know, I mean, it's committed. It's just
it will happen.
We're trying to hold on to it and keep making a little bit out of it as long as we can. So, okay. Any other questions or comments, Representative?
So, question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For Dave or Pam. Would we be making a motion after the fact? Wouldn't it look better that if we were on board before this would happen? I mean, as this committee, I would feel more comfortable being in that situation than, you know, the transfer is made and then you come to us and then, I mean, maybe we wouldn't approve it. I don't think we'd carry any weight, but it probably would look better in my eyes. I don't know. That's my feeling.
Well, yeah.
I mean, if it's going to happen at some point, why don't we do it now and have it done? And
Mr. Chairman?
So, go ahead.
So I would just, so we it's up to the advisory board, but by all means, if you would like to say, we can add craft language that says, for the eventual transfer of the BNDCD program from the budget stabilization fund to the legacy fund, the investment policy statement would change as follows. Boom, strike the CDs and strike the one sentence. So that way the board could approve it now in advance, and that's wonderful governance.
I think, you know, with the conversations, like I said, the budget stabilization fund is for all intents and purposes committed to its intended purpose. And so it wouldn't hurt to, as long as we're meeting, because their next meeting more than likely is going to be in December. You know, and if it transfers before that, you know, then we play catch up again and stuff on it. So if that's the intent of what, and I think it is to move this over into the legacy fund, the fixed income portion of the legacy fund, I guess if the board wants to do it that way.
I would feel more comfortable, I mean, say next month, you know, you never know, the sky falls and you got to do this. And then we come back at our meeting whenever and pass a motion that we're going to do this when we've already done it. I don't know. I'd like to keep it clean. That's my feelings. I don't know what the rest of it.
Well, and I know, yes, you know, we talked downside, and I think it was kind of addressed earlier, was probably the downside. It is, you know, our income goals or investment goals, it might put a little more of a pressure on to try to meet those would be probably your biggest downside on it, that but otherwise it isn't. As far as the money, you know, the principal and stuff on it isn't really the issue. It's more of just what the returns were, and it's a little bit less than what we kind of shot for on that fixed income. But then I was reading yesterday where I think German bond market or something went to zero, so anything above zero might be an investment goal too. So, but that's the only downside that I think that was really that I could see that in the conversations the last couple of weeks.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to make a motion. The wonderful words that Dave just said, I will say them back. You got that right. So that's my motion.
Okay. Is there a second? Okay, so basically it's been moved and seconded to change the short-term fixed asset income and BNB CDs and the bank loan and floating yield. We'll change those percentages. And you'll come up with some language to put that into how we want to do it, basically.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, absolutely. I'll come back, craft a specific language, share it with the board, and say, is this consistent with the expectations?
Well, and I think it's just a matter of changing kind of the policies of how of.
It's relatively straightforward.
Yep. Yeah, because you basically spell it out here where you're on page 9 of how it's going to be crafted.
That is correct. Where we talk about the program size, the 5%. In the requirement that we have a 1.75%.
Yeah, it's so very simple, just what you said.
It's, yes.
That's all we need.
So, okay, do we need a voice vote on that? Roll call? Okay, we'll have a roll call vote.
Chairman Kaepernick?
Yes.
Vice Chairman Klein?
Aye.
Representative Kreit?
Yes.
Senator Sinner?
Aye.
Mr. Hardmeyer?
But you're not personally involved in it. Yeah, but the bank, we're all invested in the bank.
Mr. Rauschmeyer, I'm sorry, Rauschberger?
Yes.
Ms. Sharp?
Yes.
Yeah, Eric, we're all in this together. we got a lot of other issues going on.
See, Mr. Chairman, their vote now. I'll be able to sleep better tonight.
Okay, that was passed. So you'll come up with some language, and we'll have to change these policy and guidelines and stuff on it. I don't know if the committee, since it's been voted on, I think I'll just have to get, could you have something put together? Because we got a budget section meeting here in a couple of weeks. You know,
we'll have it
we can
tomorrow.
Have a new policy, and we can, well, I think you're on budget section too, so we can, I don't think we need to call another meeting, but we can review it, and we could probably sign these new policy guidelines and stuff on it at that time.
Happy to do it.
Well, yeah, you can email out the copies too and stuff on it, but we'll have to physically sign it, and that'd be the next time I'm in Bismarck, and if you could get it done by then, we could go through it then and email out copies to everybody in the process of it. So.
Happy to do it, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Members of the board. At this point in time, and then I was going to switch over to the legacy fund, unless there was any discussion on the budget stabilization fund further.
Why don't we take a 5-minute break? I'm going to
Why
don't we do that here for a second.
Yes. So I understand you had a conversation with the lady. Yes. So to the extent that
fund new vehicles.
Right.
Those are four pieces. What about the existing vehicles that are rolled over?
So my question is, it's kind of like a rolling
So we'd have to make up these.
If you were not at this
Well, I mean, we've got and that they roll over every 5 years in treasury. And those are locked. We cannot argue that.
Okay.
You can't go back and say, oh, by the way, they'll change your deal to increase your pay. I mean, that's what it is.
No, I understand.
It's that this thing rolls over every 5 years at this rate.
Yep.
So, I mean, to the extent we have loans.
I've got a list of all 20.
You got to say.
Yeah, you probably got a better version of it. Yeah, so we have some that are okay.
So, yeah, we have some. You know, particularly these traveling loans here.
Yeah, the last, well, two of the last. It's more than, so you've got 85 million.
That's quite a bit.
Right, your current is 32. Right, so I'm looking at some 21 and 11, 32.
So
your expectation was that it was the end of the basis.
That would be perspective on anything that we want.
Okay.
And we're at 75 for
it. So it would be the higher of the treasury rate or 175.
Going forward.
Okay. I could probably look at that. Let me just think about it.
What I'm concerned about is the existing money.
No, okay. But what you're saying
is that we are those payments, you know, I mean, we have to.
The goal is not to disrupt the program. The goal is to
preserve it. But so then, I mean, so I always thought that going forward, you know, we said it going forward, not on the existing.
Okay.
That, so all of a sudden, now, we have to, you know, these roll over. So then we got to make those choices. On deals that we thought were committed and funded and all of a sudden we're saying no, those deals
the public commissioners 14 states in
that's what I was
okay
because I get there because you can pass that right on you know that this is the program now.
So you're talking about an existing ceiling that maybe at a higher rate than we set it up
below the 175.
That the only point I'm saying is so it's a new CD.
So we had put in some substitutes.
Well, it's a commitment that we made that you know that it rolls over automatically.
Okay.
Chris is just an agreed upon goal.
Okay.
So now,
I understand you can solve them.
Yeah, so, I mean here's the issue. In these cases, we can't go back to borrow.
Understood.
So, you know, if you say, well, I'm at 175, the Treasury's at 120, you know, we're even.
Okay, so you're saying for existing CDs, for the existing match loan CDs,
yeah.
There's a little bit more of a connection. Yeah, I understand that. So let me just think about it.
Okay.
We were told you that
I understand.
Because we just simply don't have an opportunity to
okay.
Pass that.
I guarantee we will come with a new treaty and say, any more gray hair. You're doing a good job.
Yeah. Well, all right.
No consensus. We'll figure it out.
I mean, that was
able to be okay. I do not appreciate that fine print.
Okay.
But thank you.
I thought that
was so good.
And you know,
a warm but late $2.
No, I know. You know, there's someone
to enter right now. Yeah, and so they're going to pass the
It's a tough environment.
The exit now is Britain currently is on
I would bet against that personally, but we'll see.
You don't think it's
going to personally.
There was a lot going on.
I thought there was something else to do, which is the way the system was. I thought there was one other. Yeah, that's not a personal. Well, anyway, I mean, that's kind of the speculation. Because you're talking about, you know, out of a commitment of $200 million, $79 million.
Yeah. Is that what it is right now?
$79 million.
Okay. I didn't. The latest one. Okay. It's actually sub-80.
I got it.
Okay. Yeah. So they got $120 million to generate 1.75, or always go for more.
Yeah. I'm going to have you come out with me for the program.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. No, I don't. I'm being a smart guy. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah, thanks.
Just two questions.
Summer cold. Daughter brought one home here right at the end of school. It took me 2 weeks to get it, but she finally gave it to me.
She was determined.
Yeah, I was just, I don't know where George went to. Yeah, we can get, he wasn't too far away. Well, we can get started again. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, the next topic for discussion is the legacy fund. And this, again, this is just a roll forward of activity since the initial funding in September 2011. The first column has contributions. You see in fiscal year 2012, at about $396 million, fiscal year 2013, about $791 million, fiscal year 2014, over $900 million, fiscal year 2015, over $1 billion, and then fiscal year to date, this is through April 30th, is about $378 million. So total is a little under $3.5 billion of contributions or collections, tax collections, that have gone, that have been deposited into the legacy fund. Over the course of the last 4.5 years, earned about $250 million or about $250 million of income. I'll talk to the performance a little bit more. This is actually the latest number we have. So fiscal year to date through April 30th, we've generated about $30.7 million of income this year. Disappointing. It's a function of what's going on in the markets overall. It's a little bit less than 1%, about 0.65%. Add that all up, the total balance as of April 30th, 2016, had a market value of a little over $3.7 billion in the legacy fund.
You know, and Dave, that's what, you know,
I've had some people commenting on this, and that's I tell them that this thing is like moving a super tanker. You don't turn it on the dime. You know, they think we're in and out and following these trends and stuff on it, and that. But it does. It is a tough environment, and I guess one of the questions is, are you going to get into that later here on where we're making it work and where we aren't and stuff on it?
Absolutely. In fact, I'm happy to address it right now, just to cut to the chase, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. So this is for the 1, 3, and 4.5 years ended March 31st, 2016. So not the latest. I'll speak to the a little bit more current. But so we've lost about 0.33% for the 1 year ended March 31st, 2016. Our policy benchmark, which is based upon our strategic asset allocation of 50% equity, 35% fixed income, and 15% diversified real assets, if we would have just invested in quote-unquote passive benchmarks, we would have lost about 0.78%. So we spent a lot of time several years ago developing a long-term strategic asset allocation. The expectation of that is that we'll generate over a long term a 6.4% return. Having said that, the markets haven't been giving us that of late. The markets gave us a negative 0.78% for the 1 year ended. We generated a loss of 0.33%. So we actually outperformed the market, the benchmarks, by about 0.45%. If you go to March 31st, 2016, for the 4.5 year period ended, so it's that last column on that page, we've generated a return of about 2.57%. If you were to look at what was our policy benchmark during that time frame, realizing a lot of that time frame was where we were invested in short-term fixed income up until August of 2013, until we started the transition, our policy benchmark would have been 1.8. So again, we have long-term strategic asset allocation goals of to earn 6.4% over any defined time period. Even a 4.5 year time period, we're not going to hit those goals because the markets are not necessarily going to generate consistent returns every day, every month, every quarter, every year. Over the long term, over 5 to 10 year time frames, our expectation is hope is that they will. All I can say is, based upon our asset allocation framework, we've been pretty good at outperforming the market from a passive benchmark perspective. 45 bips over the last year, about 0.75% over the last 4.5 years. So if we were to speak to where have we done well and where have we been more challenged, I think this next page might be more helpful. It's page 20. So when we talk about the equity markets, we can talk about the U.S. large cap equity market. So this is for the 1 year ended March 31st, 2016. Large cap equities generated a return of about 0.5%. That's the target return. We actually generated a return of 1.25%. So we actually outperformed the market versus a passive benchmark. Now listen, hindsight's 20/20. If we were the best investors in the world, we would have put 100% into real estate. If you look four line items down, real estate actually generated an actual return of 12.4% during the last year versus a benchmark versus 11.8. But again, we're long-term disciplined investors. Our long-term asset allocation is 30% U.S. equities, 20% international equities, 35% fixed income, 15% into real assets, including real estate. Based upon all that, where were we most challenged? I think not too many people would be surprised to say, geez, international equities actually lost on an overall market basis about 8.27% last year investing in international equities. We actually outperformed the market. We only lost 5.8. It's still disappointing. Whenever we're saying we lost money, it's disappointing. At least I can take some comfort, though, is that we didn't lose as much as the market did overall. Let's look at another kind of subcategory, the second column, and small cap equity. Everybody thinks all the U.S. equities have done well. Small cap's been challenged. Small caps actually underperformed international equities over the last year. They lost 9.76% as an index. That's the Russell 2000. We actually did a little bit better than that. It's terrible to say we did a little bit better and we still lost 7.5%. But versus the market, the managers we selected actually did a pretty good job. So I put that all together, and I agree. It's tough to get questions to say, what's the goal of the legacy fund, right? Is to create intergenerational wealth and positive income. There's going to be times when markets are going to underperform. This is long-term expectations. That's what we're seeing today. If we can continue to still outperform passive benchmarks during a period of that is challenged, it gives me great confidence that we'll hit it long term.
What does this put us against, like a
like an S&P, you know, where would this put us? Have you ever, do you do that? You know, just is, if we just drop, you know, and just put it against a fund, you know, and where were you at on something like that?
So for the 1 year ended March 31st, 2016, the S&P 500 generated a 1.8% return. Okay, so we would be up 1.8% rather than down a third. There's a fair amount of market volatility in S&P 500. If we would have done that, the last 4 days would have been particularly challenging because the S&P 500, the last 4 days had the worst 4 days they've had in a long time. And it's just really not a part of what kind of what you do when you do institutional long-term strategic planning. When we sit down with our pension trust, when we sit down with the legacy fund, when we sit down with workforce safety insurance, we develop long-term asset class expectations about what equities are going to return in the U.S. and international markets, what fixed income is going to return over the long term in the U.S. and international markets, and what real estate is going to return. Maybe everyone in here would have known that we should have put all of our money into real estate over the last year, and we would have earned a 12.4% return. It's easy to say that saying now, but I'm happy that we had 5% at least of our allocation, and I wish we would have had more. But to say, just adopt the S&P 500, you're going to have extreme volatility, more so than what we would experience in this portfolio.
And real estate's risky. I mean, on the risk scale of where we're at here, it's probably one of the more riskier ones, though, too, isn't it?
Absolutely. The other thing is the worst thing you can ever do is to chase returns, right? So real estate's done really well. So if you, God forbid, you ever push more money into real estate now, over allocating to there, your chances are there's a mean reversion. There are things that outperformed over the last 6 months generally have a tendency to underperform in the future. It's just things have a tendency to average out. We want to be disciplined long-term investors.
I guess one of the things, Dave, is, you know, compared to what the returns and what our costs, you know, I mean, and like I said, that at the end of the day, it really don't matter. It's what's coming in between, you know, between what we're getting and what we're spending, I guess.
That's a great point, Chairman Kempinick. Members of the board, so the hardest thing in the world is to say, why did we pay someone 50 basis points to lose 5% of our money? And it's like, well, that could have been the best 0.5% we spent if the market was actually down 10% and we were only down 5%. It still hurts, though. It's like, why didn't we just hold it? Because no one knows what's going to happen from income and return expectations over a short period of time. And because of that, we want to stay long-term, disciplined, diversified investors, and this will prove out over the long term. And it's actually done pretty well over the last 4.5 years on it versus a benchmark perspective. But it's tough. Listen, it's much easier to be up here when it was after June 30th, 2014, and we had positive double-digit returns. That's a wonderful scenario. Unfortunately, the markets are not giving us that today. If I can still step back and say, on this page, for the 1 year ending March 31st, 16, we still added 46 basis points versus our benchmark, makes me feel, I don't want to say it makes me feel good. It gives me some comfort that at least we're doing a pretty good job of picking managers to execute our strategies overall.
Any questions?
Yes.
Go ahead, Mr.
Dave, you know, our benchmark of 6.4, remind me again when we established that, how we came to that, and how often does that get reviewed as a realistic return?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Hardmeyer, that's a great question. So historically, you kind of revisit asset allocation frameworks every 5 years. I think we kind of developed that in late 2012 and effectively implemented it starting in August of 2013. I would suggest near the end of this year, we start considering doing another asset allocation framework. The time that was done previously, I think we reached out to probably a half a dozen or a dozen firms, had them come in, give presentations. We selected a firm called RV Coons, who did a very nice job of coming up with our long-term asset allocation framework of 50% equity, 35% fixed income, 15% diversified real assets, and came up with an expected return target of about 6.4. But we should sit down over the course of next year and refresh that analysis. It's good to do things whenever you have kind of major changes. So initially, we started off with a program at its infancy. We've got done implementing a very sound and thorough and diligent implementation strategy for that
prior asset allocation framework, but we should sit down over the course of next year and develop a new thought process, a new framework to say, hey, based upon what we know now, would we tweak that a little bit? My own suspicion is that it probably wouldn't change much, but it will, things always change a little, but we will see. We'll sit down, and that's a great work item to take going forward.
So Dave, your expectation that it wouldn't change, you're talking about the asset allocation or the expected return?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Hardmire, we would look at it all. I would think there would be no major change in it. There's always some change. As case in point, TFFR did an asset allocation study over the course of the last year and reduced its return target from 8% down to 7.75. Mm-hmm. We'd look at the legacy fund and say, given what's in the market today in a challenging interest rate environment that we were somewhat discussing earlier, you know, maybe you take it from 6.4 to 6.25. But that's just a potential suggestion. We'll sit down and see what the markets are. The only thing that's for certain is I know between today and the day we complete the study, the markets are going to change, and that will impact what the expectations are going forward.
Well, I think one of the things, committee, and you know, you look back when we were, and it was 13 is when this got started. I think we had in May of 13 is when we implemented this change, and then it took us a better part of a year and a half to move it around and stuff on it. So it is, it does get to be, time frame wise, it does get to be kind of and maybe we should talk about that today too, because it is a time consuming. I think one of the things, and boy, that never is, we've actually seen a deflation instead of inflation into these markets and stuff. And I think that's been one of the challenges we've had all along here is that a lot of this was based kind of on an inflationary type, you know, you'd see, you know, maybe because that was our conversation when we were messing with the fixed income was, you know, what rate do we need just to preserve our capital and stuff. I think we were looking at between 2.5 to 4%, I think, at the time when we were doing this. I don't know, what is it to preserve your capital? What, 2% inflation? I guess that's the biggest thing. Are we preserving the capital that we're collecting, you know, on it? And that's, you know, like I said, and that becomes an issue. And then the expenses of how we're maintaining that. And but that's been, I think, kind of part of the problem is there's been, instead of an inflationary, it's been a deflationary type market here, especially the last couple of years. And I guess that's the other thing is too, is a lot of the critics that I hear about anyways, they bring, well, the Dow's up, you know, they're bouncing in the 18,000s and stuff, you know, and you're sitting there, well, yeah, but don't move that. If it was your personal account, you know, and but I don't think they're saving that much money either, you know, but it does get to be a challenge when you're trying to guess out this, you know, on a long-term basis. And truthfully, I think when we did that, I felt comfortable with RV Kuhn. You know, I mean, it was probably based a little more on an inflationary increases than what we've been seeing and stuff on it. But that's, you know, I guess that's something that we're going to have to discuss is, do we want to start or have a restart a review on that? And because that takes, I remember when we did that the last time, that took better part of a year to get that all done and stuff too, about $60,000 in the project.
Chairman?
Yes, go ahead.
Question, Dave, given that over the actual return on the asset classes over the last year has been positive except for two classes, how often do you review the different classes and over time you see asset classes that are underperforming? How often do you look at those and look to the fund managers and say, hey, this isn't working. What are we doing wrong? What can we do different? How often do you do that?
So we look at investment returns on a monthly basis from an investment staff perspective. We sit down with the state investment board on a quarterly basis and go through a very comprehensive performance evaluation. As example, this is the legacy fund, the summary version book, just for the 15 managers that we have in the legacy fund today, and this is just for March 31st, 2016. So we do a deep dive on a quarterly basis. we try not to overreact to short-term events. We look more at, you know, what's happened over the last 1 to 3 year periods. It's a little bit more challenging with the legacy fund because we've really only implemented over the last 16 to 18 months. Having said that, we have track records with these managers because they were part of the insurance trust for 5, 10, 15 years before that. So we sit down and we say, over the last rolling 3-5 year basis, are you performing in line with expectations? Long and short of it is, if a manager is underperforming in an environment where you expect them to underperform, i.e. perhaps they're a value manager and value has been out of favor, you can take some comfort with that. However, if they're a growth manager and they're underperforming in a growth market, we're much more likely to move. So the short answer is we look at it on a very regular basis, kind of do deep dives on it on a quarterly basis. Over the course of the last 5 months, we actually, the state investment board clients, we've done manager searches in private equity, international equity, and U.S. small cap equity. So on a regular basis, including one strategy here, we will review our managers, and if they're not performing in line with expectations, we will terminate them and replace them. As case in point, this manager here, Cap Group, we actually terminated on or about May 31st and brought in William Blair to do an international equity mandate. They're managing about $450 million across all the SIB clients. So I apologize for giving such a long answer, Senator Sinner, but the short answer is we look at it on a monthly basis and deep dives on a quarterly basis with a focus more on rolling 3 and 5 years than at quarterly or 1 year numbers.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Absolutely. So Mr. Kemenick, just to address your one question, the whole concept before is we wanted to at least beat inflation, right? Mm-hmm. So when we were 100% invested in short term, we were losing our capital, right? Because we weren't even. So that was the genesis of the RVK asset liability study. And as a result of that, we came out with a long-term expected return expectation that was going to generate 6.4%. I can almost, let's see if I can actually get to a page I want. Hold on. I'm looking. This is it. So here. So inflation. So about 2% is really where it's been averaged. So we want to earn at least about 2% per annum over the long term, given current inflationary trends in the U.S. If you're just investing in 100% short-term fixed income, it's going to be very challenging to do that. So why did we adopt our asset allocation framework of 50% equity, 35% fixed income, 15% real assets, was to beat that.
Yep.
So.
Yep. No, and that was the chat. You know, I mean, it was then too, you know, and stuff. I think when we were, deflation didn't really come into the conversation
right.
at the time and stuff on it. And that's been one of the things on a longer term basis has been, you know, when you're used to some type of inflationary increase over, you know, maybe not over year to year, but at least there's been, and you're trying to, like I said, because that was our conversation with the fixed income. If we're going to do that, it was kind of brought up by Representative Crate. You know, we'd have spent this money. You know, I mean, there you could have got rid of a couple billion dollars pretty fast, and we wouldn't have this fund. And I think that's the defense, though, of having this fund. It's not only a future growth type, you know, it's basically going to replace the mineral wealth that we're receiving today at some point in the future is what it's going to do. But you want to preserve that going forward too. And that's been the main goal of this from the get-go.
Yeah. So Mr. Chairman, Kemenick, members of the board, so $3.7 billion has been saved by the state in this fund. That is just outstanding. On top of that, so we saved 3.5, we earned $250 million. Okay. If our primary goal, our first step was to beat inflation, right? We beat inflation. For the 4.5 years ended, our net return was 2.57%. So at least we didn't lose to capital preservation. Clearly, we're not hitting our 6.4% return target, but we've just very recently only gotten on implementing it. So long term, we need to stay the course. It's always worthwhile to do asset allocation studies on a regular basis. Kind of best in class is every 3 to 5 years. We pretty much just got done implementing, so it's a timely manner to do that. And the investment staff, including Darren and I, will sit down and come back to the Legacy Fund Advisory Board and with a plan for reassessing the asset allocation framework going forward.
Well, committee, I guess, you know, that, like I said, do we want to because our next meeting is going to be in December, and then it'd be either probably towards the end of the session next year. Do we want to start this process now? You know, because it takes, you know, we won't have an answer till next year anyways and stuff on it. Do we want to start this now and look at where we're at? Because I think you're right, too. There's some things, you know, I mean, we looked at, because like I said, there's some of these investments were geared towards an inflationary increase, and I don't know if we need to stay focused on that or not, or, you know, maybe we should, who knows, but it might not hurt to look at, you know, look at where we're at with this. And I know it was a big discussion to move at one point even out of the short or out of the fixed income. And I can remember that conversation. But I don't know, committee. Go ahead, Senator.
Chairman, and I guess I would look to you, Dave.
Sure.
I mean, this is what you guys do all the time. We're kind of just fishing here. We've seen dip always creates concern.
Absolutely.
This isn't the only fund you manage that might have a dip.
That is correct.
So are you? How do you see this as how we move forward? Do you think it's something that we have to get on right away, or are we just, I mean, like you said, we only became fully implemented in the last 12 to 15 months or whatever? I'd like your opinion. I know you work at the will of the board here. We kind of tell you. We work with you, but
absolutely,
I respect what your thoughts are.
Thank you
are
very
also.
Much. Now, Representative Senator Klein, Chairman Kempinek, members of the board. Darren and I, when we, in our investment team, we sit down, we look, our targeted framework was 2017 for coming back and looking at the asset allocation framework for the legacy fund. It's not an arbitrary decision. It's based upon how recently had we just got done implementing it. Quite candidly, everything else that we have going on, we kind of manage the overall kind of flow. So in my mind, we don't need to start it today. We don't need to have that action going forward. Having said that, just because you don't give us an action today doesn't mean we're not going to be working towards a goal of coming at a future meeting and saying, here's our suggestion to formally go forward and implement an asset allocation framework study in 2017. So does that address your question?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Dave, I guess that's what I would be looking at.
Yes.
That's what you do.
Yes, 2017 is probably the more appropriate time frame. Just gives us a little bit of time to, lack of a better term, absorb, digest kind of what we just got done completing in January of 2015, gives a little time to pass. And it's still best in class. I mean, TFFR and PER sit down every 5 years, do asset allocation frameworks. We did this in late 2012, right? Is that correct?
Yeah.
So if we're doing it in 2017, we're kind of right in the sweet spot of kind of every 5 years. It doesn't mean you can't do it sooner, more frequently, but that's not overreacting to...
Well, 2017 is, you know, because it does, you know, and that was a big discussion when we were even looking at committing longer term on some of the, you know, because in the legislature can access 15% of the corpus of this if they want, and it gets, you know, that was, we kind of, as a board, I think, on the discussions, we kind of forgo that, you know, I think, because we didn't reserve 15%. I mean, they're all in pretty much, I mean, you're going to pay some penalty if you want to take 15% out of this. And but it was our thinking at the time that we'd forgo the 15% requirement, you know, it was cumbersome for one thing to do investing, because you were always hanging that basically out. You had to basically put 15% in the budget stabilization fund is what you wound up doing. And so that probably isn't such a bad time frame, because after that, like I said, the legislature can access that. Oh, sorry about that. Yeah, my fans. It isn't that big a room. But that probably wouldn't be the worst thing to do, and we'll be through this next session, which will probably give a lot more indication of how this is going to be handled in the future.
Chairman?
Go ahead, Senator.
Just a question of clarification. So of the principal and interest in the legacy fund, what is eligible to come out of there for the legislative use or for the budget use in the next biennium?
Well, committee, and that's something that we're looking at right, well, it's being looked at. There was a bill over, I don't know if the Senate got into a big discussion about it, but we had a bill in on the House side that basically clarified what the earnings state got prior to 2017 rolled into the legacy fund part of the corpus, or clarified it. The way the Constitution reads right now is that after 2017, the legislature, you know, the earnings could be appropriate, you know, and you could appropriate for 2017 biennium, 2017-19 biennium, you could appropriate their earnings, because appropriation does not mean you're appropriating. It doesn't mean you're taking, you know, but after June of 17, you could access, you know, if we appropriated this next biennium, in theory anyways, that you could use the, if it's $250 million or whatever, would go into the general fund, or it could be appropriated to use, you know, I mean, it'd be for the 17 biennium, but it could be appropriated out, because the way the Constitution reads is 2017. The legislature could also take 15% of the corpus with three quarters or supermajority votes. And
so if I'm correct, then based on the numbers that are up there, and if I remember correctly, as of July 1st, 2017, money can be used out of the fund. The legislature for the 2017 session can appropriate with a regular vote, all of the income from the past. Is that right? You're nodding your head, yes. Or only the income that they currently have?
Well, it'd be tough to start spending future earnings out of it, but Pam, you want to comment on that?
If I can clarify, so the Constitution says that earnings accrued after July 1, 2017 are transferred to the general fund. So when we do our executive budget recommendation and revenue forecast, we will be including the estimate of the earnings that are accruing in that biennium in our revenue forecast. So it'll just be part of the general fund. Now, the earnings that accrued prior to July 1, 2017 is a whole different issue, and I believe the Treasurer's Office, State Treasurer, has asked for an Attorney General's opinion on how those earnings could be used.
And then to follow up then, and exactly, give me an explanation of what is earnings. Okay. Is it cash earnings, or is it also include asset growth?
Earnings, and I know there's a definition of it, so it's would be interest income plus realized earnings, and maybe Dave can clarify that.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Chairman, it is correct. It's realized earnings. So I actually thought it was, I had it here, but I'm not finding it at this very moment, which is my fault. But it's realized gains in income. So i.e. it excludes unrealized gains and losses. And we actually put it on our website every month. And I want to say I know this says total income is $250 million. It's a subset of that. It's between $200 and $220 million. But more appropriately, that is what's created before July 1, 2017.
Yeah.
So it really, that's the reason why the AG opinion was requested, because it's not clear kind of how to be used. But the question, what is it? It's realized, so it's income, interest income, and realized gains. And that number, if you were to ask what it was from inception today, is between $200 and $220 million through April 30th.
And also any dividends that were paid on any of those?
Yes, because that would be interest income, dividends, realized gains, less realized losses. So, and that's about $200 to $220 million out of that $250.
But we don't know what's going to happen to the $250 million at this point.
That is correct. I don't.
Well, and that's, go ahead, Mr. Schmidt.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sinner, the constitutional language was vague in the sense that we were not given a directive as far as what those dollars, if those dollars would be made available. And that's why we have sought an attorney general's opinion, because we will be making the transfer from the legacy fund to the general fund and want to be assured that we have that accurate. You are correct in the sense that the 715 will be available, but we just don't know. And if I can go back just a minute, when we talk about interest and the assumed interest rate of the legacy fund, that is determined by how you do your asset allocation study. And I know some of you weren't on the board when that was done. So based on the risk that you take and the buckets that you tell the state investment board that you want to be invested in, determines your risk factor, which ultimately affects your assumed interest rate. So they all correlate together, and that is done with the exercise that you do.
Say that again.
Okay. You do an asset allocation study, which looks at the different buckets that are available to be invested in. And based on your comfort level and the amount of risk that you're willing to take will determine the assumed interest rate that that mix, you know, whether it's 50% fixed income or it's 50% income. If you go more equity, you're going to have more risk. You're going to have a higher assumed interest rate. So based on the risk that this committee gives the directive to the State Investment Board determines your assumed rate of return. It's the most important thing that the State Investment Board does or any policy board does is the asset allocation study.
And at the time we were doing that, we were moving from
cash.
No risk.
You were moving from cash.
But no return either.
So let me follow up with another question. So are we looking at this income number for the period after July 1st of 2017 that's going to go to the general fund? All of the income at that point moves to the general fund. Is that a conglomerate of everything? Because if you're going to look at different buckets, some buckets are going to say, I lost money on that one, but you made a whole bunch of money on this one.
It will be a net.
It will be a net.
It will be a net of all the buckets combined. It will be a net.
So in reality, there will be no loss to the, there should be absolutely no loss to the principal.
There shouldn't be, no. But we don't know.
That was one of our asset allocations, was when the board at the time was concerned about, was that the corpus would not suffer a loss. It'd just be the earnings would be if we didn't earn as much. That's why we set it at the 6.4. It was kind of an in-between range that we had to pick from. You know, we could have shot for 9, you know, but we'd have been taking a lot more risk on that, and we could have shot for 3, which we'd probably be at 1, you know, now. So, and that was the whole discussion centered around kind of what we were talking about earlier, is just preserving, you know, what did we need to do to preserve the capital, you know, and we were at a higher rate than 2 when we were having this conversation. But 2 is, if we drop below 2, then it becomes an academic argument of should we spend the money today then, you know, or spend that money today, because you really doesn't pay to hold on to it. So it becomes that type of an argument. And so far what we're seeing here, and we've done better than preserving 2, it's just now we're basically kind of a little bit over preserving the principal of the fund. And that's kind of the challenge of this is, you know, but to move this when it took 18 months to change it from one thing to another, can somebody tell me what it's going to be doing in 18 months from now? And we'll entertain that motion then, you know, and that gets to be the challenge. I don't think we're sitting at where we're at today isn't that bad. It isn't where we want to be, but it isn't when you look at what's going on globally. We're still in the black on overall yet and stuff on it,
so. Well, Mr. Chairman, I would contend there isn't an investor in this country right now that is where they want to be.
Yeah.
Just because of the volatility of the market.
Yeah. And that's what we're trying to stay away from. That's why we're not, you know, I mean, chasing this, you know, we could get into the other ones. Go ahead. Oh,
Well, George, maybe you understand the same way I do, but when we're talking about realized gains, I mean, the asset has to be sold rather than, you know, this asset class is up 20%. That doesn't mean you get to take it unless you sold it. Right, Dave?
Yes.
Probably.
So in that case, if we're gonna transfer that money over to the general fund, and we're gonna transfer realized gains, that means we're gonna have to sell some assets to do that.
That is correct.
Everyday course.
However, if we continue to see an upgrade in the amount of price per barrel, and we deposit large volumes of dollars every month into the legacy fund, we will be working with Rio, and if we have a large, any deposit that would go in during that period of time, we would retain, or they would retain that as cash in the legacy fund, so we would not have to sell assets in order to recoup the cash to make the move to the general fund. So we're going to work together, hand in hand, to make sure that we can try and not, just like Pam and I and Rio are working together on the budget stabilization fund, we are doing the best we can to make sure these funds always retain the best opportunity for the rate of return. That's our job. So we'll be working with the cash that we have to reduce the amount of sales of equity.
Kelly, when do you expect to get the AG's opinion on that?
They told us it could be several months. Mm-hmm. We submitted it a couple months ago, so I would anticipate, now that current events have settled a little bit, I anticipate we should probably be receiving it in the next month or so. And as soon as we do, we will be communicating that to this committee as well as to the budget section.
Any other questions?
So if the Attorney General's opinion comes out that we can use the income from the previous, you know, the 250, you could draw it down in about 7 months with the 30% of the oil revenue that comes in, because we're getting about between 28 and 30 million a month deposit into the legacy fund. So could it be done that way?
I guess I'm missing your question.
Okay, we have 250,000 or million that would have to be transferred. Okay, we receive about between 25 and 30 million a month revenue.
It's been as high as 114 a month, but okay.
Yeah, so it could, the transfer be made over a period of months into the general fund. That way we wouldn't have to sell any assets that we have now.
I don't know if the Constitution would allow for that. I'd have to drill down before I could commit.
Yeah. But something to, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely something we could look at and work with.
Well, I know, and that's the biggest problem is the legislative history on these funds. They're back-to-back legacy fund proposals. One, the first one got defeated, was a lot tighter in its language. The second one was a lot looser, although the conversations, because I can remember sitting in the committees, that the earnings, I think, on some of the, anyways, the sponsors, I think that they kept talking about it. Anything after was fair game. Anything before was part of the corpus. But that, like I said, it never, are you sure about that? Well, but the one sponsor, anyways, I know brought up that, you know, because I think it was asked at one time of what the earnings were going to do. And I don't, well, like I said, it was never probably clarified, because the conversations were bouncing between the two proposals, the one that got defeated the year before and then this one that got passed. So, we'll see what the Attorney General says on it and stuff on it. So, anyways, Dave, we can get you into history.
Sure.
Why don't you go ahead and just kind of go through some of the allocations and stuff here and kind of go back to where we were.
Very good, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. So this is page 18, just a brief note on the legacy fund asset and target asset allocations. Always within 1%. You can look at it in the bar and the pie charts, or you can look at it in this column here, percent difference. We're generally within 1%, actually never more than 0.6 as of March 31. So listen, there's no way, if we ever get it exactly right, it's just, that's just luck. Markets move on a consistent basis. We're not trying to drive to an exact 22% number for one asset versus 35% for domestic fixed income. We're trying to get close to it. Some assets are a little bit more target, more difficult to manage, such as real estate. They're actually over-allocated to real estate. That's as much a function as real estate being the best performing asset class over the last year, excuse me. The generated return again is of 12.4%. So that's the reason why we're a little bit over on real estate. So very close. We're staying true to our long-term asset allocation, which is, again, 22% U.S. large cap equity, 8% U.S. small cap equity, so a total of 30 for U.S. equities, 20% to international equity, 35% to domestic fixed income. Again, no international fixed income there, 10% to diversified real estate. Real assets, 5% to real estate, and then cash is relatively small, a little under 0.5%. So,
is that just kind of a float, the cash? I mean, isn't you just
correct
between allocating it someplace else?
So at any point in time, so at March 31, we may be setting up to move to do some rebalancing. Generally, we're going to try to do it before month end, but not everything occurs before month end. Sometimes things are going to roll over. Some have particular capital calls that occur on the first of a month. So yeah, that's just a little friction from doing rebalancing on a monthly basis, but pretty small if it's less than 0.5%, but something that we look to minimize on a consistent basis. So, yes.
Well, quick question. Can you, for some a really inexperienced investor, can you explain the difference between diversified real assets
sure.
and real estate? Is there real estate in diversified real assets?
There is not. So the best way for me to explain this, Senator Sinner, is to look at page 22. So we have a diversified real assets allocation, and you'll see we have TIPS. So this is actually a global TIPS allocation. So TIPS is short for Treasury Inflation Protected Securities. It's meant to provide inflation protection. So in our diversified real asset bucket, it actually includes TIPS and then some infrastructure investments with J.P. Morgan and Grosvenor. So the short answer is diversified real assets is TIPS, so index-linked securities, inflation-protected securities, and some infrastructure investments. And then we actually have a separate allocation for real estate. Yes.
Infrastructure investments, are those bonds?
No, those are actually private investments into infrastructure investments. So I should know. It could be something like a toll roll. It could be something like a water power plant. It could be like a wind turbine, things of that nature. I could give you a nice list of what our infrastructure investments are, but it's, I guess, for lack of a better term, what it is. You know, it's roads and bridges and things where you can tie to the infrastructure of the predominantly U.S., but there's some outside allocation to it as well. And we invest in that through J.P. Morgan and Grosvenor infrastructure funds. So
just trying to learn. Thank you.
Sure. No, absolutely. So we talked about asset allocation. We talked about performance. This slide kind of highlights how individual managers have done. So if you look at page 21, you can see overall our domestic equity portfolio over the last year. Again, this is kind of a sad story. We lost 1.1%, but it's actually better than the overall. So if we look at perhaps a better example is large cap equity. Our net return was 1.05% over the last year. It beat the Russell 1000 by about 55 basis points. So again, overall, the U.S. large cap equity is outperforming. LA Capital did a nice job of outperforming in two strategies, as did Parametric. If we had one underperformer, it was the LSV Large Cap Value Fund. So value's been kind of been out of favor. Having said that, we benchmark it against a value index, but even with that, they significantly underperformed for the last year. So
when you say value, that means companies that explain with, that.
Oh, sure. So you can have a growth tilt or a value tilt. So value is where when you're looking at an investment, you're saying, geez, perhaps it's undervalued at this point in time, and it's something that you think it's going to appreciate more greatly going forward. When you think of a growth investment, it's probably something that it's a very high quality type of investment, and it's something that probably have a high dividend allocation to it, so it's more of a growth investment. So value is more buying it at an opportunistic time that you think will revert in the future. Growth is you're investing in something that is a strong performing asset and you think it will continue to perform. From a value, so we generally have value and growth type of investments combined together. So if you look at our large cap equity exposure, we have a growth investor with LA Capital and a value investor with large cap. So if they're ever in or out of favor, one's going to be in favor, one's going to be out of favor. They're going to kind of complement each other in addition to some core portfolios.
Just how much?
Yes, that is correct. That is correct. But overall, so I could go through each individual manager's happy to handle any individual questions on this. If there's one area we have been a bit challenged, it was in our domestic fixed income portfolio, which we're going to look to analyze going forward. Over the last year, we generated a net return of 1.15%. The best benchmark for the for the fixed income sectors, the Barclays Ag should have generated close to 2%. And we will sit down and say, where did we underperform? We have a pretty significant allocation to a Wells Capital kind of BAA, which is a near non-investment grade investment. It's technically it's investment grade, but it's near non-investment grade. And that was quite challenged. High yield investments were challenged over the past year.
See, and why was that?
Sure, flight to quality. Why was high yield kind of when things get challenged in a global economy and perhaps China's growth rate slow and there's uncertainty with Brexit risk and things of that nature, which is more of a recent phenomenon, it creates uncertainty. And when uncertainty occurs, riskier assets will trade off. So a high yield investment is a riskier asset than a U.S. Treasury investment, which is ultimate. So we have a diversified investment approach. We have some investments in State Street U.S. Government Index, right? That generated a 1.72% return. That did pretty well over the past year with a more of a risk-off trade.
Seeing our international equity, what's going on, like the EU, is that affecting
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, so we don't have a dedicated international fixed income mandate in legacy funds. That's the best news in the world to have. I shouldn't say best. That's a positive factor. Having said that, we are a global diversified investor. We have U.S. equities and international equities. Needless to say, we see a lot of red over here in international equity and also in U.S. small cap, right? Yeah. So equities have been challenged over the last year.
Thanks, Senator Sinner.
Thank you. Is there anything you need me for to order anything that you want?
I think we discussed what we were. If we had a vote, we'll just put that off for now. Yep.
So the sad part is we're 50% invested in equities, right? And there's a lot more red on here than in black. So that's the reason why we've been challenged. Having said that, we're diversified, and because we're diversified with 35% fixed income, 10% diversified real assets, and 5% real estate, at least for the fiscal year to date ended April 30th, 2016, the legacy fund has generated a positive net investment return of 0.65%. So not great, but better than the benchmark. So.
I know from our last in December, we were kind of looking at international was actually a little better in December than it is today. And I know our small cap investment wasn't real. I think it was pretty red then too already and stuff on it. And that's why, you know, and it does get to be you wonder, okay, and like I said, it 6 months isn't a big time frame and stuff on it, but you're always curious of how that probably is. What's the prognosis? Is it going to get worse before it gets better? Because right now I was reading an article this morning that they're showing a lot of investor cash is sitting on the sidelines again, and that kind of hints of a recession and stuff on it. How are you positioned for that to show up?
Yeah, no, it's needless to say, very challenging markets the last year to invest in. We're long-term investors. When things have a tendency to underperform in the short term, they're going to generally outperform. It's just a mean reversion. I can say that a long time until it actually happens is when it kind of hits home. It's always nice when you're describing it after a downturn when the recovery has occurred. It's very tough to hold to that when we're in the midst of a challenged economic environment. I'm very bullish U.S., very bullish long-term on global growth rates. There's a lot of good global growth. It's not as strong as it used to be, but it's still positive. It's a 2 to 3%. I've got a slide in here on global GDP growth rates. So if we look at world global GDP growth rates, so 2.6, 2.4, the only time that it's projected to be over 2 is 2016 to 20, and a big part of that is in the emerging and developed markets. Whether that occurs with everything that's going on, we'll see. But at least
Well, you'd think, you know, since we don't need, you know, we aren't spending this.
Right.
That we would, you know, the value added part of this is where you get, because there's stuff out there that are phenomenal on potential, you know, and stuff on it. And if it is low, if we're taking advantage of it, you know, you could see this thing doing well, you know, into the future and stuff. It's just the solidness of the investment is what it comes down to.
Sure.
And stuff on it.
Makes great sense. Yeah. So just, you know, things that generally, you know, challenge today could be some of your best performers tomorrow. Again, just to reemphasize again, net return over 4.5 years, 2.57%. So we're beating inflation. Yep. Yep. We're beating our policy benchmark. So is it where we wanted to be at 6.4%? Clearly not. But that's a 4.5 year time frame where we only recently got done implementing the 5-year asset allocation framework. So on an overall standpoint, so if you look at legacy funds, investment managers, they've generally outperformed their benchmark indexes. If there's one area where we're weak, it's in fixed income, which is a 35% allocation. So that's where we're going to spend some time going forward, is working on adjusting our fixed income. But excuse me.
But we aren't. See, and that's the thing, though, you know, on that fixed income, and there it does become a question, you know, if we're too much below the two, you know, we really, and that's where, you know, maybe we, you know, we're going to focus on that, on
yes.
asset allocation, you know, probably start that a year from now if we're going to do that. But that is one of the things that we have to look at, you know, because if we can't preserve the capital that we're investing, you really have to question what, you know, I mean, it's safe in one side, but, you know, you're going to get pushback on the other side of it, of you know, the legislature or demands of whatever comes forward and stuff on it, if you can't
absolutely
work. And so that's going to be a challenge that way, you know, for us, it's because that's what I wanted to know kind of today was, is are we preserving the capital that we've been putting in here and stuff, and by all and indications we are. So
that is correct. That one page right there, if we're generating a net return of 2.57, and our inflation expect, our actual realized inflation has been 2%.
Yeah,
we're doing a little bit better than what we need at a minimum basis. Having said that, we will assess, Darren, Eric, the State Investment Board will sit down, and I, and analyze our fixed income portfolio to get better returns. Fixed income should be generating 3 to 4% over the long term. We're not there. The market wasn't there, but we will look to enhance that going forward. On page 24, I just have a listing of all of our individual managers and strategies with their positions as of December 31st and March 31st, 2016. So the previous couple slides kind of showed how each one of those individual managers performed versus a benchmark. This slide shows what the actual dollars are invested in each one of those strategies. There's 15 individual managers listed there within the legacy fund. We have 20 different strategies. Most of them are quite sizable. It's rare for us to have a relatively sub $50 million investment. The only one is with Grosvenor, and that's where we're in the process of implementing some infrastructure with them. Otherwise, most of them are $100 to $200 million in size, which allows us to realize kind of good fee savings overall. The last thing I want to make you aware of is we did have one watchlist manager, Capital Group, that was actually replaced. Yep, we replaced them on. Just briefly on fees, so this is stale information. We will come back to you in the next meeting and show you what our performance is for fiscal year 2016. Again, we generally don't, we're always looking at fees. We're always looking to drive it down and come up with ways to generate additional fee offsets, such as some securities lending income. Having said that, we do expect legacy fund fees to slightly increase going forward because we've become more fully implemented in a 6.4% target return allocation, right? It took us time to implement that strategy. So when we come back at the next meeting, I would suspect we will show total investment expenses instead of 27 or 33 basis points, probably closer to 40 to 45 basis points, but we shall see. That's a very rough, broad estimate. My hope is that they would be less than 50 basis points. And if they're in the 40,
that would be across the total fund.
That would be across the total fund, right? So there's wide disparity there, right? So real estate investing, it's private market. You'll see that it's 0.74% for fiscal 2015 versus over 1% in 2014. And then we have other things such as U.S. large cap. We're investing at less than 20 basis points. cash 13 basis points, fixed income 30 basis points. Yeah, wide disparity with private assets such as real estate, which generated a nice 12% return for the last year.
Well, it becomes how active your managers are and investing stuff on it. And that's one thing you probably want to highlight when you come back, if you're coming in
sure.
where it's showing some fee increases on it. Are we getting it back again? And that does become, you know, because it always, even the activity, you know, unless they're really increasing too, you know, you kind of wonder, because I think you've brought that up before, it's taken us $100 million to make $200 million, you know, and stuff on it, and it does become large numbers no matter how you no matter how you look at it.
Absolutely. Stuff on it. Absolutely. So just, I mean, this is stale data, but fiscal year 2015, right, 33 basis points, we had outperformed by 94, so that's a 3-to-1 ratio almost. That's pretty good. If we can get anywhere close to, hopefully we're spending less than 50 basis points and we're generating an additional 50 basis points on top of that after fee. So it's like a 2-for-1. Give someone 50 cents and get a dollar back of every year. That's a pretty nice ratio. Not crazy, but reasonable. So then we have the investment policy statement for the legacy fund. So the only thing I would suggest here is kind of similar to what we had made, the board had approved on the budget stabilization fund, is we would say within this policy asset mix, section 6, mm-hmm. we would just add a sentence below this. So we have a fixed income allocation of 35%.
Yeah.
We would below this say the BND match loan CD program will represent no more, will equal the lesser of 5% or $200 million. Of the legacy fund, and that would serve to be consistent with what the state investment board has approved in the past, and also consistent with kind of the 5% reasonable asset allocation framework that says if we put up to 5% in, we can still hold to our long-term expected return target of 6.4% for the legacy fund.
Yeah.
So I'd be happy to restate that if it would be helpful. I said that a little fast.
So I suppose we're going to have, do we got to vote on this too then, don't we? I think everybody, Senator Klein, go ahead, Ryan. You wanted to make a motion? Because that's what we're going to need, is a motion to, you move the motion to, it basically copies the language that we talked about earlier. So
I'll second.
You second it? Okay. It was moved and seconded by Mr. Hardmeyer and seconded by Mr. Rauschenberger. Any discussion? The clerk will take the roll.
Chairman Kepnick?
Yes.
Vice Chairman Klein?
Aye.
Representative Kreit?
Yes.
Mr. Hardmeyer?
Yes.
Mr. Rauschenberger?
Yes.
Ms. Sharp?
Yes.
Motion pass.
Okay. Anything else that we need?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I had nothing else. Thank you very, very much.
Okay. Oh, Representative.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Going back, you know, when we received this Attorney General's opinion, you know, if it comes out, you know, that you know that they can use the $250 million. Wouldn't we then, at that time, you know, in order to, you know, meet our liabilities, which that will be a liability, to start setting cash aside to do that, as we get our deposits every month, instead of investing that money, that way we would have cash on hand to be able to do that instead of having to sell assets. I would sooner do that than having to, you know, we're going to be charged fees to sell assets.
Well, committee, the way the Constitution reads is it's 30%. I don't think there's any leeway into set anything. You know, it goes to the state investment board.
Well, I'm talking about the $250 million.
No, I know, but I think what you'd have to do is it'd just be a, there again, you're just doing numbers on a piece of paper, you know, what if because unless the thing is that number would,
you know, you could probably get into debating whether you deposited it into the general fund at the beginning of the general fund or at the end of the at the end of the biennium or the beginning of the biennium, but it would have to be made available. You know, truthfully, you could put it in the last day of the biennium. And
you're going to have the dollars to do it because you need the hard cash.
Oh, she's jumping up and down. Ms. Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you know, the Constitution requires that we deposit that 30% into the legacy fund. The deposits to the legacy fund will continue, and in coordinating with Rio and the Attorney General's opinion, we will be determining then what gets pushed into a cash equivalent or gets pushed into something, fully knowing that those dollars would have to be available at a later date to be moved back into the general fund. So we'll be mitigating that from Rio, from our shop, and from the State Investment Board to assure that the ultimate goal is to have that cash available with the least amount of expenses.
So that will automatically happen.
We will be working in tandem.
Okay.
To make sure that happens. All right. Just as we will be with PAM and with Rio with the Budget Stabilization Fund.
Because, you know, we're, you know, we have to maintain or establish, you know, a fund to meet our liabilities, and that will be a liability whenever that happens, and that money has to be there, I would say.
Yep, and the State Investment Board in Rio is fully aware of the cash requirements of this fund.
Okay.
Yep.
I'll sleep better tonight now.
Good. I'm glad I could help you with that.
Boy, you're sleeping a lot, aren't you?
I do a lot of napping.
Any other comments, questions? Is there anybody, comments, questions from anybody else? Okay. I guess the only other thing, I think we'll try to put a meeting together in December, probably sometime around the orientation session is my thinking, so we don't have to spend any more money than we need to meet for a little bit. I did ask if there was any interest. We're at the committee members, just what, I don't think there's anything right now. I think there's going to be a bill in again to look at this earnings issue again, but like I said, that's something that's coming from a different quadrant. It is. And if it passes, it won't affect what's going on today anyways, because it wouldn't take effect till after, if it did pass.
I got a question.
Go ahead.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. This Attorney General's opinion, you will receive that, Madam Treasurer. Could you, whenever you receive that, could you let us know what the decision was? Appreciate that. Thank you.
So, but otherwise, if there isn't anything, we'll see what comes up in the meantime. But otherwise, if there's no other, we'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Second? We're adjourned then.
But it's not mine.
No. Somebody else.
Oh, somebody put it on there.
Yeah, okay.
It was all here when we walked in, which is pretty nice. I want to just see if things are going to stick around. I think we're good.
Yeah, we ain't good. We haven't thrown the water in the door, except for mine. As long as I got time, I'm going to see if I can get a hold of the water. Go tell them that weather might be in a drought. We're looking for money. We're going to be in a short.
Yeah.